Welcome back, everyone. I hope everybody enjoyed the episode last week. If you haven't, go back and watch it.
How was that, right? Background.
Yeah. Down in Mexico, and the video turned out great. I thought it was great.
Binger asked me if it was a fake background.
Did he really?
And I was like, no.
All right, so.
But even the audio, everything came out so clear. Because I was worried we were outside. Birds were chirping. There was kind of wind going on. Yeah. But yeah, our videographers are really magicians.
Plus, we had our special guest with the mascot. So if you guys want to see a gorilla, go back and watch the video from last week. So it was a good time. So we'll get that here in a second. We'll episode 111. So it's Tyler, Lisa, myself, Keith. So it's gonna be good. This will be a good episode. So especially when it was a little bit late press to actually get the notes out for Lisa. So
that's a new record low.
Well, we were gonna have special guest.
Probably next week.
I shouldn't say special.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're gonna have new guests this week, and we decided to push them off till next week. So
yeah, we had two new employees starting for our investment management team. We'll introduce to the world probably next week, I imagine. But we thought about this week, and then it got to be a little bit of a rush, and then I was supposed to do notes, and then I got a little too busy. So we figured the newbies would probably have a little bit of time to do notes, because Lisa's already furious at me that I this is the new record low of.
I feel like you got to get used to it at this point.
I do by now. I didn't do anything last week. I just roll with it,
Yeah, and I even see my notes here. I didn't even change one of the headers for.
You didn't even see your notes, but you rolled it, Keith, right?
I didn't change the header for.
I was seeing that.
All right. Let's jump into two truths and a lie. We're going to talk about a little bit of the volatility, the VIX here. We'll get into that discussion here shortly, but let's start with two truths and a lie. A, the VIX, which is a volatility index, tends to spike faster than it declines. B, volatile markets historically produce lower returns. C, higher volatility doesn't mean markets are likely to go down. So since Lisa says I'm the boss for today, since I've been doing such a lackluster job, I'm going to start with Lisa.
Obviously. You always start with me, Keith. the VIX tends to spike faster than it declines. Yes. I think we had a good understanding of that yesterday.
What happened yesterday? Why don't you give us
We had a little tech sell-off in the markets, some chitters that we for sure dive into a little bit deeper. Okay. So the VIX, which is often also called Wall Street's fear gauge, kind of how we measure how fearful investors are. Okay. And they tend to spike when the fear is higher. B, volatile markets historically produce lower returns. That's not true. We have quite some volatility this year already, and markets are up well and last year too. So that's not true. So I go with B with the lie then, because then by default, C must be correct.
Tyler?
Yeah, same train of thought. VIX tends to spike quite rapidly. And then, it comes down very quickly, it doesn't come down as quickly as it goes up.
Okay.
Higher volatility doesn't mean markets are likely to go down.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that one? Lisa kind of skipped over C.
I skipped that, but now that I see it.
Doesn't mean markets are likely to go down.
But it does mean, because when the VIX spikes, it generally means markets are going down.
I should put a double negative in there for you guys. I'm really messing you up.
Yeah. This is some.
Hold on.
Wait, now I'm like.
Tyler's sweating. Lisa's starting to rethink.
I'm question my. Did you do like two lies and a truth?
I think I agree with Lisa. Volatile markets historically produce lower returns.
Yeah, there is some weirdness going on.
Hold on. Volatile markets, lower returns doesn't mean negative returns.
What? Doesn't mean likely, but C's the markets are going down generally when VIX spikes.
C's throwing me off here.
Me too. I stay with B, whatever. We are meandering around the question way far too long.
I'll go with B too.
Oh, I love it. The late preparations got everybody all flustered. You are both correct.
Oh,
it
nice.
Is B. Yeah, so volatility markets, right? Everybody sees a lot of volatility. You get nervous. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to have lower returns going forward. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe for that day.
I mean, if you take 2020, right? Like you got.
Yeah, that's a great example.
right? COVID. You got COVID.
Oh yeah,
down.
You didn't say you just said higher volatility in general, not when the VIX spikes, then yep. markets go down. And I think we kind of understood that.
Yeah, correctly. That's kind of yeah, you guys mm-hmm. did. So I even when I was writing, I was kind of getting myself half confused.
He's still throwing me off a bit here.
On C,
me
yes.
too, but
yeah, the point being is.
Don't do that with the newbies when they're coming on the pod next week.
We'll keep it very plain and vanilla. Volatility, right? We see it in mm-hmm. stock price action and kind of market movement. And it is considered the fear index. Mm-hmm. So when that happens, everybody kind of gets a little nervous. But generally speaking, those are both sell-offs and rapid increases as well. But on the sell-offs, that's generally almost a time to buy. Mm-hmm. So Lisa, you want to talk about, you kind of discuss a little bit here, the kind of volatility we saw yeah. yesterday in the market and kind of what that means.
Yeah. So generally the volatility index, as we said, it's kind of the fear gauge or sure. like how we determine how fearful investors are and where markets might be headed in the short term. And it's based on the 30-day options, basically. So how much are investors willing to protect their portfolios with options. And based on that, this kind of tells us, okay, how fearful are investors? How much do they want to protect their investments? And it usually says like a rule of thumb is it's below 20. That's just a number. It's calculated. If it's below 20, it's usually calm markets. Everything is chugging along. Everything is nice and smooth. And if it spikes above 20, then it usually signals some form of stress in some or more areas of the markets. And the height this year was in end of March with 31, yeah. which was quite dramatic.
That's pretty high.
We also had some spikes in April. And yesterday there was also a little spike over 20. So that means usually in the short term or that day off that markets are very chittery. Markets were down yesterday, the NASDAQ even more than the S&P, which is technology heavy, which is where most of the frenzy came in was in semis and tech, which also brings me to the VIX is based on the S&P 500.
Sure.
There's also another fear gauge, which is not as known, which is the VXN, which is the same thing on the NASDAQ,
oh.
which is usually more volatile because the NASDAQ is more volatile. And a lot of these fear yesterday was and sell-off was focused on tech. So the NASDAQ version of the VIX was even more, I think it was up 25% for the day versus the VIX 12%.
And so would they get to like 30 something? I think you and I were talking earlier.
Yep. Yeah. So that was, yeah. So the VXN is generally
higher,
like between 20 and 24.
But what I thought interesting that we also pointed out was the VXN had a higher volatility, this year is at like the highest, right? I think, you know, this yes. latest spike up was to what, 32, but that was the highest, you know, versus yep. during the rest of the year, it's been, you know, mid 20s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whereas you look at, you know, at the VIX, this latest spike
below
up.
Below 20 now.
And you mentioned earlier that the highest was 30. So yep, it's like, yep. so the technology pieces seems like it's getting a little more elevated yep. and the rest of the market, maybe not so much.
Yeah. And that kind of helps also maybe figure out a little bit, okay, where is the fear actually coming yeah. from, which in this case, it's kind of very pronounced and we can
see it. Yeah. Tyler, what do you think about the volatility? And is this something that, how you look at for how you manage your portfolios and stocks and ETFs?
I mean, to Lisa's point, so one that I'm blanking on his name, but DataTrek.
Yeah.
So he was on a podcast a few years ago and he always brings up, he was a hedge fund trader for a while, Wall Street analyst. And he always brings up two standard deviations on the VIX is like low 30s.
Is that kind of what the
And then
the math
three
is?
Standard deviations is like low 40s to mid 40s. And he always harped on once you start to get to two standard deviations on the VIX, that tends to be the washout buying period. And that's when you want to start getting in because that's when everybody is getting nervous. So we're nowhere near that, but I do think with what we've seen in semis the last month and a half, I think you're going to get a very volatile market for the next few months as this washes out. But I don't know. I don't pay too much attention to the VIX. Like it's a good trading tool, but it's not something that I'm like changing all of my portfolios around.
It's more important for Lisa.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. So yeah, for you and I, for individual ETFs and stocks, but I think it provides an opportunity. It's more so than just the actual volatility.
Because you know, when there's opportunities out there, not that you're not seeing it in the stocks themselves, but you know that there's enough fear out there that you can find some probably cheap stocks. But I also remember back I think it was like 2016, 2017, maybe 2018.
You and I started here together at 18. So, but anyway,
they used to have all the ETFs that were like VIX focused and they all blew up.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was like inverse VIX, 2X levered VIX. There was all sorts of crap. Remember when those blew up? That was a
hot mess.
That was a mess.
Yeah. And the other thing with those inverse things, they always don't quite seem to look like it. You think they, I get involved with those in my own accounts once in a while. I kind of scratch my head.
But to Lisa's point too, though, like VIX is 30-day implied volatility. Yeah. So you're looking 30 days out. Where do you think the fear is in the market? And most of the time, the realized volatility is not what the implied volatility is either. So you have to take that into context. Is what you might have the VIX spike to 25, 30, but your realized volatility in the actual market might be 19 to low 20s. So you don't actually get the same type of volatility that you're getting that you might see, that the VIX might be expecting.
Yeah. Good point. Lisa, I think you, volatility should be like your middle name, kind of what you kind of get giddy when you see this.
It's important for you.
It's important for me. Yeah.
When you see these spikes and kind of why don't you talk why it's more important for you maybe than Tyler and I.
Yeah. So, I'm responsible for the structured note offerings that we do once a month, 6 to 7 offerings, both on growth and income side. Sure. It's a big part of our business. Our advisors love it. It's a great investment opportunity for clients. Mm-hmm. With protecting with different buffers, barriers, give you income, growth opportunities based on different underlyings, whatever the goal is for certain clients. So I go out once a month to gather our new terms for the following month. And then we give our advisors time to get into it. And then, so there's multiple things that flow into how our terms come back from the issuers. It's the funding, obviously, from the issuer themselves, how much risk they want to take on. It's also interest rates generally, also depending on the node of growth and income. But it also has a lot to do with volatility in the market, because part of the structured notes and how they are constructed is based on options.
Sure.
That's what makes the structured note follow the underlying indexes, whatever we are choosing. And obviously options pricing, and I don't want to go too deep into that. No one wants to hear that. But again, when volatility is high, options are basically priced better, and that gives us better terms because that leaves a little bit more for actually constructing the index and gives us a little bit more and higher caps and more opportunities. So again, like a day as yesterday, when we go out with terms on that day, that usually means we get better terms, which is great for our advisors and which is great for the clients who will invest into it. So certainly for me, look at it a little bit closely because of that, because it gives me implications of how terms might come in and what we might bring to the offering.
Yeah. So the two biggest things for those products are interest rates and volatility. Interest rates been pretty steady, right? Yeah. So when you see a spike of volatility, if we're going out for terms that day, that's actually a benefit.
Yep.
The rest of the market may be selling off, but in the end, it's good for our advisors and our clients. Kind of, why don't you talk about some of the highlights of what you priced and kind of locked in for our terms for this month coming up.
Yeah, I guess most of the growth notes that we have, I think except one, and again, volatility influences notes, specific notes differently. Mm-hmm. But for the growth notes, we have better terms this month, except one. And for the income notes, that was most pronounced, and we have nearly 1% better coupon on a quarterly income note compared to last month, and then 80 bips on the monthly note. So that is a huge spike. It does not maybe tell someone something about that that is not into it, but it is a huge spike month over month and gives our clients nearly a percent higher coupon.
So the if basis. I remember right, the 40% barrier one on the income was above 10%.
10.2.
Wow. Yeah, and then that's probably one of the higher numbers.
That's one of the higher numbers that we've ever seen. Had.
Yeah, yes. We've been doing this for a long time.
And then on quarterly, it's with a 25% barrier, both on coupon and principal. It's a three-year note based on three lesser off indexes. And that is 13.45, nice. Which is also one of the highest that we've ever seen, which again gives our advisors certainly a lot to talk about this month and good opportunities to get the clients.
Why don't you bring up, so we've had some, what was that, a couple months ago? Mm-hmm. We ran into an issue of too much money flowing into it.
Oh yeah, I would not call it an issue, but yes, it produced issues for us operationally and also for our advisors. So we keep the notes open for a month.
Sure.
And the issue obviously needs to pre-hedge and covers the risk to make it possible for us
to make
our advisors can invest into it. And we have kind of a guidance of where it could be and where the final size could come in. But at the end of the day, it's what our advisors are doing, right? And what they're investing in. So we kind of have to manage that exposure a little bit to, but again, if the VIX is high, and in April when we went out with terms, it was very much over 20, so it was fear, it was like 26, 25. So we got great terms, but that also means because volatility came down dramatically.
So quickly,
Quickly in that month that we kept the note open, that issuers said, okay, we cannot keep it open anymore. And we have to cap it at some.
Because they start to
take a loss. Yes.
Yes.
That can happen. They are allowed to do that. And at any time, because we have very good relationships with them, we were able to get
more
as much as possible,
as much advisors as possible,
as much pain as they were willing to take.
Right. Yep. As much clients as possible tucked in. But again, that's some things that we encounter every once in a while. That's the backside of the volatility, that when it comes too quickly, it can move against us. But again, great terms. And
so is that a side note, just to kind of make sure people.
That's what I was going
to
say. There's certainly a possibility that
if
VIX goes from the 19.5 that we were at yesterday down to 15,
13, 15,
we may be camped out again.
That's right. Yep. But so everyone that listens to it and has clients who wants to get them in, do it now. Because everyone that is in, once the issuer closes it, so everyone that is in is in. So
we don't expect that to happen, but it did happen just because of that spike in the day we priced. Yeah. And again, I think we were at a little higher terms. What was it? 20?
Yeah,
you just said 26.
I mean, VIX was at.
Yeah, it was much higher and it came down dramatically after that. That's what. Okay. So. And also to have a guidance of how often this happens. And again, we don't like it. The issuer doesn't like to do it, but sometimes it's unavoidable. It does not happen all that often. So we had it in May, in April.
A handful of times in the last five, six years.
Because also explain our terms too.
And it was before that, it's 4 years before that. So it was nothing.
Because we get a few different term, not within one term, there's a few different prices that we get or caps that we get. So can you explain that process too?
What do you mean?
Spot rate or spot?
Spot and hold.
Spot and then we get a hold.
Okay, yeah. So when we go out with terms to the issuer, we get back the caps or the coupons on a spot level and on a hold level. The spot levels mean if we would trade right away, if we would say, hey, this is our full
size.
Yeah, if we had
$10 million of this is what it
we invest, for example, $10 million in the note, it gets executed today or the day after immediate execution. And the hold level, because we have to give our advisors opportunity to get their clients invested, get their accounts funded, get their signatures and all of that. So we usually tend to keep it open 3 to 4 weeks, more 4 weeks to give enough time and give them enough opportunities. That certainly creates a risk for the issuer because they have to manage that exposure over that amount of time because they don't know how big the size will be. Mm-hmm. If it's 10, if it's 15, if it's $20 million, it can shift quite dramatically from month to month. So they give us a hold level, which is usually a little bit lower. So we have to pay a little bit or give up a little bit for the time that we keep it open. We usually try to get that spread as narrow as possible. And sometimes it's the same, sometimes spot is the hold level, depending on the issue and how aggressive we are. And also, again, like this can also move into the opposite direction. And we had that also a couple of weeks ago when the volatility changed as much. So it can move against us when the issuer has to close the note earlier, but it also can move in our favor. And some terms that we locked in during this high volatility period or right before that volatility spiked. So the notes that were locked in with a lower coupon actually received a higher coupon at the end.
Yeah, they do increase.
So they do increase. So it gets both ways. So it could be that at the end of the day, the client receives even a higher coupon or a higher
cap. Which is great.
But the hold level is the minimum. So it can't go down.
The hold level is the minimum. It can't go down.
It can only go up.
It can only go up. Exactly. So we try to be as aggressive as possible to get our clients the best terms that we can get.
Yeah, the other thing to note is since Lisa's doing the negotiating and that, she's got sharp elbows, so she does a wonderful job of getting the best.
Australian or the Austria accent.
Yeah, I think some of our issuers are scared of her.
I think so too. I think I intimidate a couple of them, which is good, you know.
Which is good.
Yeah, no, we have good relationships. That's why we are able to get good terms.
All right, we'll change gears here just for a few minutes before we get to some fun stuff. I just want to quick talk about the kind of Meg 7 that we've been talking about for years. It's funny, I heard someone calling it the Leg 7. Which, because they've actually been, which surprised me, since mid-May, you know, so just back a couple months, that they are actually down about 7-8% mm-hmm. as a whole. And then semis, which, you know, we've been talking about how hot they are, but since that time period, they're up about 20%.
Yeah.
So semis up 20%, Meg 7 down 8, semis for the last year to date, or even a little bit more, mm-hmm. up 100%. So, Tyler, what are your thoughts on kind of what's happening, or is there something? Is this going to continue? Or
I don't think it continues. I think the lag in performance, the lag 7, a lot of it, I think, is most of the Meg 7 are the hyperscalers.
Yeah, and they're big, large caps. Right?
So it's your Microsofts, your Googles, your Amazons, your Metas, right? So those are the four main, and then Apple, I don't really consider them a hyperscaler.
No.
Or Tesla. And then you have...
Well, Broadcom. It should be 8.
I was waiting for...
Hold on. We got to talk about Broadcom. We'll come back to that. No. There's some big news today.
I was like,
today.
There is no podcast episode without Tyler mentioning.
There was some big news at Broadcom today. Anyways.
Look at this excitement.
it's kind of like you with volatility.
Yeah, right.
But I think the lackluster performance is really because investors are trying to figure out what is the return on investment for the CapEx that they're spending on AI. And so where's that CapEx going? Well, it's going to semis mainly. And then you have the rest of the AI infrastructure play. Yep. So I think investors are just pausing because we know how much they're going to spend.
Yep.
Right. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Are they actually, does that money actually go into the companies because we have such a backlog of data centers? Who knows? But generally speaking, like those companies are just spending so much. And the question becomes, what is the actual return on investment? And when does return on investment come in? So I think there's just a pause because those names have been leading the market for the last 2.5 years. So they've done very well. We got hyped up on AI with those guys a couple of years ago. Now it's like we're going to the next bright, shiny object, and we just have to wait to see what actually comes of the spend. And so I think people are using that, the Meg 7. So I was talking to an analyst, and what he was saying is NVIDIA can beat or miss on a quarter, but it's so saturated.
Meaning everybody owns
within
it.
Within their portfolios. Like everybody has 7% in their portfolios of NVIDIA. So even if they crush the quarter, it can't get, like, you don't have
probably this, not gonna go
this,
to 10.
You don't have this influx of buyers to push the stock higher. You only have sellers at that point. So I just think there's just so much saturation in those names at this point. Like everybody, whether you're institutional or not, I think everybody owns
a lot,
30% of their portfolio in those names at this point. So it's like, where are the incremental buyers to actually push those names higher? You only have sellers. Mm-hmm. And I think people are using those names to actually fund other areas where there's opportunities. Like we were talking to you and I were talking to an advisor yesterday. I was talking about grocers and I was talking about some of the healthcare. Like there's plenty of opportunities out there that some of those stocks have just done horrible. Mm-hmm. So I think, I mean, most of that money is probably going towards semis, but I think there's other areas of the market where you're going to start to see a rotation out of the Mag 7 into some of these other beaten down areas of the market.
Yeah, I like your call. Lisa, what are your thoughts on just kind of the...
I mean, again, the sell-off was more pronounced in semis and Mag 7 and all of that. I think it had also a little bit to do because now they have like pricing power because the demand is just outstripping supply by so much. And there's kind of expectations that this should ease. Like the supply constraints should ease by the end of the year, by next year. What does that mean? Well, if there is no supply issue all that much anymore, that also constrains the pricing power of these companies, which then can mean margins maybe going down a little bit.
Like pricing drop, what do you, I mean, they can drop like 50, 70%,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
which is
exactly.
Just mind-boggling. So they've been going up. So
depending on what they are like, how they returned like over the last couple of months, especially with semis. There was a little bit of fear, I think, also prolonged in that area. But yeah, to Tyler's point, I think there's a lot more opportunities outside maybe of just seeing AI as, hey, the semis, the hyperscalers. I mean, we just talked about, I think 2 weeks ago, about healthcare. I mean, healthcare is just, we talk about this for the last 2 years. Nothing really happened there. It's just bad. But there's a lot of opportunity in that sector, for example, to deploy it. And it's already happening. Or like you said, like grocers, for example, like a Walmart or whatever, who is really deploying that tech, mm-hmm. who is not obvious AI play. But certainly benefits from that. And again, that flows all back into the theme that we discussed a lot in the beginning of the year, like the broadening out, right? While the big boys do not necessarily have to fall off a cliff, but the others, more unassuming AI plays start to catch up. And then obviously that sets us up for healthy returns overall in our portfolios.
I mean, the supply constraint, I think, stays though for the semis. I think that's part of the ramp up because if you think about, I mean, Taiwan Semi, I think they have like 59% of all chip manufacturing.
Which is this?
But then
insane
I think,
but it's true.
What was the stat I saw? It was like 80 or 85% of all the AI high-powered chips are from Taiwan Semi. And the other side of it is Taiwan has a law that TSMC, Taiwan Semi Manufacturing, has to produce those high-powered AI chips in Taiwan. So then you have the China factor. Mm-hmm. So I think the pricing holds for a while just because of the supply constraint and they can't, I don't know. I think Taiwan's pretty saturated in terms of like where they can build these plants at this point.
Yeah, I
agree. But anyways,
all right.
What are your thoughts on the chips?
No,
Mag 7?
No, you guys got the same. I think Mag Leg 7 are source of cash for the time being. I do think there's value there, though. That being said, I think if the market gets a little kind of squishy, you can kind of see maybe, oddly enough, those could be a flight to safety. Not all of them. Again, they're each unique. But as a whole, I do more worry about the partial group of that semis, not all the semis. I think there's definitely ones to own that you want to own, but there's, I think, a couple that are pricing in way more than they should be. Let's quick talk about Broadcom for our last event because I know Tyler had some exciting news that I probably didn't hear about. What do we got today?
Does that have something to do with jalapeno?
It does. Broadcom officially announced their deal, their partnership with OpenAI.
Oh, nice.
Which they didn't announce on the earnings call, so I was wrong on that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Is it up on screen right now?
It's funny on our TV in the background, but it's only up 17 basis points.
Hawked hands on TV right now.
So, Tyler's got to go.
No, they officially announced their new partnership with OpenAI. They've been working on some AI specific chips, and they're calling it jalapeno.
Oh, nice. It was that's a little spicy, right?
Yeah.
That's cool. We'll change gears. Speaking of jalapenos, let's talk about our trip to Mexico.
Oh, first, that is a nice segue into
that.
Yeah, that is perfect.
So First of all, I had to give a shout out to our travel events team.
They crushed it.
And that's crazy. The whole operation, what they are setting up there is just insane.
It was, I've been to several of these and that was fantastic location, top notch. All 200 plus advisors had a great time. Mm-hmm. I heard zero complaints. Normally you'll hear a one-off complaint about food or service and this and that. The only thing that was, was a little bit slow if you're not used to it is like dining.
Dining.
It takes a while, which is good because you have more good conversations with advisors and their families, which was...
I mean, if you sit down at a restaurant, it was minimum 2 hours.
Yeah, mine were 3 and 4. Four's got to be a little long time. But again, shout out to them. It was fantastic. Location was great. Weather was great. It was warm. What are you guys' thoughts on Mexico? And then we'll jump into some other vacation stuff.
Lisa?
No, it was my first gala.
Nice.
So
it should give it a clap there, Tyler. We got a clap button and that works.
So it was great. I've made a lot of new connections with advisors that I usually don't meet on a day-to-day basis. Also spend time with their spouses and their families, their kids. That's very special. That gives us a great opportunity to kind of spend quality time and not just, here and there, an event there or meeting there, but just really quality time, sit down and building memories together during excursions that we had or in the pool or at the beach. So, and again, like you said, it's so well organized. Yeah. It's really a reward for our advisors.
It really is.
And they deserve it. And I think our travel and events team does an outstanding job.
I agree. I mean, the advisors deserve it. They earned it for the hard work that they do throughout the years. So my first one was last year, which was Quebec. This year, Mexico. And just comparing the two, I enjoyed this one a lot more. And part of it is the all-inclusive nature of it. And not just the free stuff part of it, but
easier.
Everybody's on resort. Whereas last year, because people are there with their families, kids. And so Quebec, it's a cool city. People want to go out, meander around the city, sightsee, do all of that. So no one's really if you don't have stuff, I didn't have a lot of stuff planned because it was my first one. So I didn't really do much. No one's at the hotel. Whereas this one, there was two main pools. So you could walk through the pool, see who, it was a lot easier to meet with people. So I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, it was good.
This one,
it was just a great atmosphere. The all inclusive helps. I think just because it's people can do what they want. If you bring your family, it's maybe you want to get away to the pool and order snacks and.
Yeah. So then you walk by and you just stop, say hi, chat for 5 minutes and then go to the next spot. And I just thought it was, and events traveled. It was just very well done.
Top notch. And I was there with my family on my own about 9-10 years ago. And they absolutely loved it. Memories. They still talk about that trip and they were really disappointed I didn't bring them this time, but they had work schedule and other things that was just too difficult. But so I hope the other advisors that brought their family had the same experience, and which from the ones I was talking to, it seemed like it. So home run. And again, shout out to the travel and events. Mm-hmm. Speaking of vacations, anybody got anything good, fun planned? Tyler, you start with you.
I got nothing besides my annual boys weekend in about a month.
Usually shaves a little
in the cabin.
Yes, that's all I got.
Lisa, what do you got?
Lisa is about to do her annual Atlantic crossing.
Nice.
Back to the home country. So I will be out end of July, 2 weeks between end of July and mid August. And I fly back to Austria to meet family and spend time
Mr. D going with her?
Mr. D is coming this year, yes. But I already told him, you're not my priority there. You do your stuff and I do mine. Obviously, he focuses on his friends and family and I do the same on my side.
Are they relatively close in the same city?
There's a couple of one-offs that I have to travel to.
Okay.
But most of them are in proximity. Okay. So I can spend quality time. And I just became an aunt in October. So I will meet my niece for the very first time. So that is exciting. I will miss you guys.
What are you doing, Keith?
I don't have a whole lot planned the rest of the summer. I think it's just kind of, like I said, the college kids are at home for the summer. So I'll hang out with them, take a few days here and there. And although two of them are boomeranging back home for the fall. So, mm-hmm. which is, I like that. So it's awesome. And then, no, nothing big other than we have another trip coming up here for Gradient.
That's right.
And, oh, you are doing that.
So that's in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
So from the Gradient investment team, it'll be Mike and I heading down there. So again, that's, I'm really looking forward to that because I've never been, like I said, this last resort I've been to and I knew it was going to be a great experience and I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, it's the Four Seasons. It's going to be great, Keith.
Four Seasons. It should be a good time. Looking forward to that. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening and like and subscribe.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Eligard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.